Hello everybody, and welcome to the July edition of the DistilleryTours.Scot podcast, giving you the inside track on the whisky distilleries, whisky shops and whisky bars of Scotland, and telling some of the stories about the people and the places that make Scotch so special. My name's Richard Woodard, and this month I spoke to Matthew McFadden, co-founder and director of Glasgow-based retailer The Good Spirits Co. Matthew tells us about how his passion for interesting whisky, spirits and wine led him and two friends to set up the business, how the company's three shops got through the COVID pandemic, and he recalls a memorable whisky voyage to Campbelltown. If you'd like to find out more about The Good Spirits Co., their shops, tastings and other services, check out distillerytours.scot and click on the Find Out More button on their listing. Enjoy this month's podcast.
Start your whisky journey with Caledonian McBrain, proud sponsors of Distillery and Whisky News podcasts. Visit calmac.co.uk for further information.
Our guest on this month's Distillery Tours podcast is Matthew McFadden, co-founder and director of The Good Spirits Co., the Glasgow retailer of all manner of whiskies, other spirits, wines, beers and food. Matthew started the business back in 2011 with a couple of friends, and since then it's gone from strength to strength, adding two new shops to its original store in Bath Street. And if you haven't been, The Good Spirits Co. is one of those Aladdin's caves where you can get lost for hours exploring all the fascinating and hard to find bottles on display. It's definitely worth a visit next time you're in Glasgow. Matthew, welcome to the Distillery Tours podcast. It's great to have you with us today.
Hi, Richard.
For those who don't know about it, tell us a bit about yourself and about The Good Spirits Co.
I've been working in the drinks trade for about 18 years. And prior to that, I was quite an avid amateur consumer of interesting beverages. And I was driven to get involved in the drinks trade because I'd been working as a sales rep for 5 or 6 years and selling jewellery across the UK and elsewhere. And when that came to an end, I really wanted to get involved with something I had a passion for, that's something that felt right to me, I suppose. And over that period, I developed this passion for good wines and interesting whiskey and things like that. So it seemed like an obvious thing to do, to try and get a job with Oddbins at the time. And in that journey through 7 years of working for Oddbins, I met my business partner Shane and Mark Conley, who was also one of the directors originally of the business. And after about 7 years of working for Oddbins, it kind of felt like our time there was coming to an end. Oddbins were going through a bit of a rocky patch, and I think we both, well, all three of us felt that there was an opportunity in Glasgow for something new. But it was kind of a strange time as well, because supermarkets were dominating retail of wine particularly, and we didn't really see an opening in Glasgow for a new wine shop. What we saw was an opportunity for something quite different, and we really put our necks on the line to try to set up the Good Spirits Co.
Sure. It must have been quite a tricky thing to just start something from scratch like that with just the three of you. I mean, what were some of the big hurdles you had to overcome in the early days?
I think the realisation that we could do it was the biggest hurdle. You know, we kind of joked about, bounced about ideas when we were hanging out. And it was really, I suppose, Mark turning around to me to say, well, I've managed to get some money. Do you think you could match that? And I spoke to Shane, and Shane was like, yeah, sure, I probably could do that. And so I begged and borrowed from family and friends and managed to scrape together an equal amount of money. And that moment of saying, oh, hang on, we can do this. We've got the nest egg that we need to kind of get this in progress. And it was a pretty much, I think it took about 6 months of fleshing out the idea, and then another few months of trying to find a unit, and eventually we found this unit on Bath Street, which where we are based now. And it took us about 6 months for the landlords to take us seriously, and then it took another 6 months to get planning consent, and then another 3 or 4 months to get the license. And then we had to refit the unit, which was an absolute shell. So it took a huge amount of time.
I was going to say, it's not a quick thing that you could just turn around and do then. And then once you've got the shop, you've then got to build up the customer base. I'm guessing those early months were pretty hard work for the three of you.
Yeah, we weren't earning a lot of money back in the early days. We still don't run the business like that, really. We are very much driven by trying to source really interesting things. And at the start, we were really lucky to have made contacts with some great suppliers who are very supportive of us. And what really ticked the boxes for us, I suppose, was when I worked for Odmans, I could see a demand for interesting spirits, but I just could not get access to the range that I wanted or the customers I had when I worked for Odmans were looking for. And when we were bouncing ideas around about the shop, we were looking at thinking, do we open a whiskey shop or what do we do? And looking at the demographics of Glasgow, thinking, well, Glasgow's very different to Edinburgh. Edinburgh's awash with tourists. Glasgow's not like that. There are tourists, but they're not coachloads of tourists being dropped off in the middle of Glasgow every day.
Sure, yeah.
So we kind of thought, we can't do just whiskey. We need to have a broader base and offer a kind of broader range of interesting things. And it was funny, we opened the shop and immediately there was a reaction from people getting excited about suddenly seeing these things. Because often if you go into a traditional off sales, you might see spirits relegated to a few shelves behind the counter. But by having a whole shop full of a variety of different spirits, you know, a couple hundreds when we started, whiskies, gins, I think we opened with 25 gins and people thought that was amazing. We had this huge array of different gins that they'd never seen before, which was very exciting, particularly because back in 2011 we were right at the start of this explosion of gin, and now we probably sit with about 120, 140 different gins on the shelf.
Yeah, and whiskies as well. I mean, I think I'm right in saying you've probably got, what, hundreds of single malts in stock at any time?
Probably about 300 or 400 different single malts. It just varies depending on what's been released and what comes out. It is a constant challenge to try and keep the shelves stocked and trying to find really interesting bottlings. And we're also, I suppose, slightly constrained by the fact that, you know, we're all very passionate advocates for what we do and what we sell, but we're also very keenly aware of price points of things. And, you know, being in Glasgow, we also know that we need to be sensible about how we price things. So trying to find the right products that we feel offer value and offer quality is a constant challenge, but we enjoy it.
And I would imagine that even more so at the moment, we're all aware that the cost of everything is going up and not much sign of it stopping. And I'm guessing that's also true of whiskey. So probably even more important to find some value. I mean, in your judgment, where is the value in Scotch in particular at the moment if people are kind of limited by their budgets?
Well, that's tricky. I would say that there's some really good quality core malts that you can pick up, which I think offer remarkable value considering quality and consistency. I think the Old Pulteney 12-year-old is a great entry point. I think Arran 10-year-old has consistently been an absolutely fantastic dram for a long time. But for me, I get very excited about independent bottlings. Brands like James Edie, who bottle a 46% range, which are very good kind of drinkers and come in at a really sensible, accessible price, have been a real find over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yes, they did quite an interesting blend as well, I seem to remember, which was a sort of recreation of the old James Edie Trademark X blend. I remember being quite impressed by that when it came out.
Oh, it's excellent whisky. Unfortunately, we struggle with blends in Glasgow. There's very much a kind of fashion thing about how people want to present or drink whisky, and often we have people looking down their noses slightly at blends, which is unfortunate because there's some absolutely wonderful blends about, but really folk are looking for single malts.
Yeah, that is a shame, as you say, but it sounds like you're not one of those people. You're quite a fan of blend yourself, I guess.
I'm just a fan of flavour, I suppose. I love good products. I love good whiskies. And when I think about the history of Scotch whisky, blends have been intrinsically part of the story of Scotch whisky. And it's so important to embrace that and look at where Scotch has come from as well as where it's going in the future.
And there's some great value in blends as well, for that reason, because they're not maybe quite as fashionable in this country anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going back to the business, you mentioned supermarkets at the beginning of this. We're all aware of how dominant the big supermarkets are in retail. How do you kind of compete? How do you stand out from them? Because clearly, I guess you can't compete on price for some of the big volume products. So what's the secret?
The secret is having an amazing team. Shane and I have really worked hard to try and make sure that we've got a really strong team in place in all the shops. We try and support them and encourage them to be as knowledgeable as possible about what they're selling. And I think, you know, what's crucial about any shop like ones we have, specialist retailers, is that you have to accept people when they walk through the door from the point of where their knowledge is at and try and address them at that sort of level so that you're not talking down to people, that you're welcoming people in and trying to bring them into this wonderful world of flavour that we have in the shop. It's so important not to scare people away, because it is intimidating walking into a shop like ours, and because you've got such a vast array of things that lots of people don't know much about, and you need a team of people who can break that barrier down, who can be warm and welcoming and try and lead people, start people on their journeys, you know, take them by the hand almost and walk them through what could be an amazing adventure through different spirits and whiskey and things like that.
I'm interested to know how you kind of go about that. So let's say I walked in and I don't know a lot about whiskey, but I want to buy a birthday present or something, and I fancy buying somebody a single malt, but I don't have a clue where to start. Where do you start as somebody working in the shop?
Generally, you just ask a few questions, and that is always the key thing, to try and work out where their knowledge is at. So you ask, do you know what they like? Have you seen bottles they've drunk before? Do you have a kind of price range you want to stick to, so that we're not recommending bottles that are £100 when someone's got £50 to spend, and that might scare people off, because it's so important that customers feel that they're not being pressurized into buying something that isn't for them or isn't for their friend, or feel that they have to spend this much money to be taken seriously in a shop like ours.
And I would imagine if you did that, you're probably less likely to see them again as well. That's the other side of it.
I always say to folk, it's not this sale that's important, it's the next one. So it's really important that people walk out happy. So whether or not they walk out with nothing, that's totally fine, as long as they come back in the future when they do need something. Or the key thing is that interaction to make sure that they're happy.
So you started off with whiskies and other spirits, as you said, but the business has expanded quite a bit. I mentioned at the start, you've got 3 shops now, and you're kind of across the whole world of drink, I guess, now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Shane, my business partner, we worked together quite closely in Odbins. We were the management team in a shop in Glasgow for a wee while. And whilst there, we both really bonded over really interesting wines, and we just really enjoyed learning together and sharing that experience of trying a kind of range of different things. And I think the opportunity arose to expand from just doing spirits about 7 years ago. And that was really exciting, because it gave us that toe back in the water of where we had been in the past and where some of our passions lie as well. And it's been fascinating, particularly suddenly seeing the world in a very different way. When we worked for Odbins, the choice of our range that we could pick from was what was in the warehouse, whereas now we could pick and choose anything from over 120, 130 different suppliers that we use. You can cherry pick all the best things, and it's just so exciting.
But obviously the last couple of years haven't been that easy for anybody. I'm kind of curious to hear about the whole COVID experience for you and for the business. And first of all, how you coped with that. And then maybe some changes that have come as a result of all those lockdowns and difficult times.
Yeah, it was tough, you know, a very, very tough period. And I know for the first 6 weeks or so of the first lockdown, we just didn't buy anything. We sold product stock that we had, we made sure we paid all our suppliers, we made sure there was a bit of money in the bank, and then we slowly started expanding out again. And during that period, obviously, we had no customers coming into the shop. Luckily, our West End shop was able to stay open in a kind of limited sense, one customer in at a time, that sort of thing. And we started doing deliveries. Our website went from almost a standing start to exploding in terms of sales, and required us to quickly scramble to try and launch a new website that we've been working on in the background for a long time. And that was great. The furlough scheme worked really well for us. But we also were adamant that we had to make sure we kept all our staff on full pay all the way through the period, because, you know, they've got bills to pay, they've got families, they've got commitments, and it's not their fault that they're in this position.
And that must have been a bit of a scary time financially when you're having to do all that with no clear idea of what the future is going to bring.
It was scary. Shane, he keeps an eye on that side of the business. And when we talked it through and he said he was confident that we could get through it, we just need to be careful. I was very much reassured. You know, Shane's very measured and that made me feel more relaxed, although it did mean several months of pain, but we got through it.
You were saying to me off air that, you know, you had that personal contact with customers still because you were dropping off deliveries to them and they probably weren't seeing very many other human beings at that point, were they?
It was funny. Shane and I were very keen to get out and do the deliveries ourselves from the start, mainly to show people that we were still here and keep that contact with customers. And at the time, we felt it was really important for people to see us out and about. But in reality, I think it wasn't really about that. It was about that human contact. And I've had numerous customers say to me afterwards that, you know, those conversations, maybe 5 minutes, maybe sometimes half an hour, standing on someone's doorstep or at the end of their drive or wherever it was, just talking. And it was maybe the only person they'd spoken to for the whole week or the only person they'd seen in person, face to face. You know, I felt that was such an important part of what we were doing. It's not just about selling people a nice bottle of whiskey or something for a cocktail. It was very much about spending a few minutes just making sure they're okay, having a chat. And that then rolled into when we restarted doing tastings, but only online. So all through Zoom, and we're still maintaining that just now. And that was so much fun. And it really felt like we were able to reach out to people in quite a different way and cheer them up.
Yes, yeah.
And that was just such a change to what we did. And the shop, when we opened it, always had a tasting room. And that was a really important part of what we did, having that opportunity to taste and talk and learn all together with a range of customers across lots of different products. But being able to then do them online and reach more people and suddenly see that opportunity where it wasn't just about having people in our shop in Glasgow. It was actually being able to have a regular customer on at the tasting who then invites their friends who might be in Manchester or in London or up in Inverness or Aviemore or somewhere like that, and be able to then join in and be part of this event and see them in a social setting when everyone's so spread out and so alone at the time. It was great fun, and it really got me through, and I'm hoping it got them through as well.
Absolutely. And I'm guessing it probably spread the name of the shop a little bit, didn't it? I mean, if you're getting people tuning into virtual tastings who are nowhere near Glasgow, they'd probably never heard of you before, but suddenly they had.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely brought lots of new people to the shop and to the website. It also allowed customers who are maybe only occasional customers, they might pop into the shop two or three times a year when they're passing through. Now they're able to tune in to the tastings. They've become very, very regular and very, very good customers and friends. You know, it's become a nice part of a really awful time, the fact that we've been able to get closer to people who live so far away.
Hopefully we are returning to something approaching normality now anyway, which is great. Now, I should say we're recording this episode about a couple of days before Father's Day. Now, I know, because I get sent press releases about Father's Day, that this is a big time for selling whiskey in particular. I'm always curious to know, though, whether people are buying particular whiskies for Father's Day, whether there are favourite whiskies, or whether you're seeing any particular trends this year.
You know, whiskey's always very popular at Father's Day. And I think when folk come to us for presents for Father's Day, it tends to be people looking for something that's a bit special, something a wee bit different, something that they can't find in the supermarket. And we've found, and you know, demand for distilleries, new distilleries like Ardenmarken, going through the roof, and they've just launched their new bottling to replace their kind of occasional batches. They've now released a kind of standard Ardenmarken release, which is going great guns at the moment.
So many new distilleries around at the moment. So if you're interested in finding a new one to try, then there's plenty coming on stream, I guess.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think Ardenmarken's been a big favourite of the shops. But you know, you've got Torrevieg as well. You've got the Rasse Distillery, Nicknean. They're all doing great things. King's Barns is another lovely distillery. It's such an exciting time. And I think being able to talk about these new distilleries and almost at this kind of new age of new distilleries is very exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a bit of a golden age for sure. Let's talk a bit more about your own love of whiskey. Now, clearly you had your time at Odbins and you were already interested at that point, but when did you first encounter whiskey? Was there a sort of memorable first taste that you can tell us about?
I remember the first time I was drinking whiskey was probably when I was maybe not quite old enough to really buy it. And I remember buying a bottle of whiskey from a hotel in a local village. And it was called Old Inverness, which is I think a long gone blend. And it was a challenge, I have to say. And I think at the time, I was quite young, but when I was older, I think I remember my first bottle of single malt was a bottle of Lefroy, 10-year-old that I bought when I was about 19. And I was determined to like it. I tried it and I thought, this is very strange. This is a distillery that's got a great reputation. This is something that I should like. And I persevered with the bottle, and by the end of it, I was thinking, okay, right, I need to buy another bottle of whiskey. So I bought a bottle of Lefroy Cask Strength, 10-year-old, as my next bottle. And drinking that, I was thinking, this, yeah, okay, I think I'm getting a hang of this. So my next bottle was a 15-year-old Lefroy. I was clearly in a very safe space. Well, and that really set me off down this Islay channel for quite a while. And that was really the whiskey that I drank through my early 20s was all Islay whiskey. So I developed a love of Lefroy. Then Ardbeg took over my passion. And then Bruichladdich started doing some bottlings. And that started getting kind of interesting. But as time has gone on, my palate has diversified. And, I love all sorts of whiskies now.
Well, you kind of went in at the deep end in flavour terms there, going straight in with Lefroy 10 anyway. And as you've explored whiskey, I mean, what's the most fun for you? Is it just the tasting, or is it some of the experiences, maybe travelling to see distilleries and things like that?
Oh, there's nothing better than travelling to see a distillery. I think it really brings you to the place and the people. And for me, it is all about the place and the people, the stories, the being in a still room and hearing the kind of tinging of the hot metal and the feeling the heat that almost oppressively emanating from these stills. It's quite exhilarating when you have that opportunity to see these things. But I do love visiting distilleries. And I was recently went on a trip to Springbank with some friends, and it was just a wonderful experience seeing a distillery that's so raw, so cut back to what they do and so honest about what they are. Fantastic.
A bit like going back in time, I guess, to the way whiskey was made, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, you name it, really. So any particular fact, you mentioned Lefroy, you said Islay, you said you've diversified. Is there anything that's recently really grabbed you in whiskey terms as being very exciting and interesting?
On this trip with some friends, and I think this is really tells you all about whiskey, or explains what whiskey should be about to me, is that it's all about moments. It's about sharing a dram. And we were lucky enough to be able to sail over to Campbelltown. My school friend managed to borrow someone's small yacht, and we sailed over. And on the first night, we had moored up in Lamlash, and I had brought some bottles of whiskey with me that one of our good customers had brought back for me from Campbelltown when he'd been visiting recently. And it was a handful. The first whiskey we tried was a handful Hazelburg from Springbank, and it was glorious whiskey. There was a sweetness to it. There was a lightness to it. There was a freshness that it was just the perfect whiskey for that moment. We were sitting in the boat, moored up, drinking, appreciating the fact that as friends who have been we've been friends since we were 12, and in fact they were the very friends I shared that Old Inverness with many years ago, we were having that moment of thinking, we've known each other for over 30 years and we've been friends that whole time, and we're still able to enjoy this moment and do these things and just take that time out of life to relax and appreciate each other. It was just fantastic.
Well, you've anticipated one of my last questions, which was the kind of desert island whiskey moment. So I don't think we need to do that now. I think you've described that absolutely beautifully. There's one other question that we always like to ask people on these podcasts as well, is that if anybody listening to this is just getting into whiskey, not really sure how to go about it, how to explore it, as you said, it can be really intimidating when you first get into it. Do you have any particular advice or tips for them?
Oh, the always the key thing to do is find someone who can give you advice, be it in a shop like ours where you can come in and start a journey by talking to someone and through a range of whiskies and trying to discover what you might like. Yeah, we've always got whiskies on tasting, and thankfully now that we've moved on slightly from the lockdown and things like that, we have restarted tasting in the shop. So looking to try a few different whiskies to work out where your palate might be is a great way. Also, going into a good whisky bar. You know, we're so lucky in Glasgow to have two of the best whisky bars in Scotland, with the Pot Still and the Bon Accord, which are wonderful places to hang out. And Paul and Frank are both great people to learn from and to spend time with if you want to kind of start your journey. They're really great people to speak to. But, you know, there's loads of great bars about that you can do these things with. And I think that's the opportunity. It's just taking the time.
Yeah, it does take time for sure. Right, I've got one last question now. Again, I should say we're recording this on what is in England, if not in Scotland, the hottest day of the year so far. I'm kind of melting at the moment because all the windows and doors are shut and it's very, very warm. Now, people might not think of whiskey as being a summer drink, but I mean, what would you say about that? Are there styles of whiskey or whiskey drinks that are particularly good to try on a hot sunny day?
On a hot sunny day, if I was drinking whiskey, I would tend to stick to something a bit lighter, or, you know, potentially look at making a whiskey cocktail of some sort. Highballs are wonderful ways of drinking whiskey. You know, just a measure of whiskey topped up with soda, lots of ice. It's just a really nice, refreshing way of exploring whiskey, and it's the thing that reinvigorated the Japanese whiskey market, these highball drinks, and it's just perfect for a hot day when you want hydration and flavour. But there are so many great cocktails as well that you can make with whiskey, and for us, whiskey is about enjoyment and consumption and about sharing with people, and how you choose to do that is very much up to you. And if you can make a cocktail using whiskey, they can be wonderful. Challenging, because the flavour profile of whiskies are so diverse. To get a standard whiskey shoehorned into a cocktail is very difficult. But once you get the right balance, they can be absolutely wonderful. My colleague Sarah made this glorious cocktail with Aardmerkin recently called a Pina Colada. So it was a Pina Colada style drink made with Aardmerkin, and it was glorious. Graham, who works for Aardmerkin, he used to work for us as well. He said it was at the time probably the best thing he's drunk all year.
Wow.
And we're looking forward to relaunching that whiskey, that cocktail at some point.
It's only 10:30 in the morning here, but I am already tempted to try and make that myself. Listen, Matthew, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you today and getting such a good insight into the Good Spirits Co. So from all of us, just thanks very much for joining us.
That's a pleasure. Lovely to speak to you, Richard.
If you enjoyed hearing from Matthew and you would like to know more about the Good Spirits Co., visit their dedicated page on the distillerytours.scot website, where you can find out more about their shops, website, tastings, and other services. DistilleryTours.Scot has every whisky distillery visitor centre in one place. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or sign up for our Distillery and Whisky News monthly email to hear the podcast first at distilleryTours.Scot/signup. In the meantime, look out for our August podcast, when we'll be visiting another of Scotland's great whisky distilleries. See you next time.